Hi everyone, thank you for tuning in to our newest episode of QBD Book Club, the podcast. I'm your host, Victoria, and I cannot wait to spend some time with you today. Long-time reader, first-time talker on QBD Crime Club today. At long last, I get to chat to an author I've read and reviewed the past couple of years. A big hello and welcome to the fabulous Pip Drysdale.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So glad to have you here. And we are talking about your next big thing, which is The Next Girl. And I have to tell you, I've loved your books the last couple of years. I think this is absolutely my favorite.
Oh, yay. I love that. You've got it. You want people to start loving your books more and more, right? The further you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I'm going to start by talking about you and where you are and this book stack behind you. Is this indicative of you and this like mad clutter?
It's very indicative of me. We have like a very messy book stack, a very messy record thing with Dirty Dancing on top.
Oh, we are people. Yes. You're my person.
Yes, you do.
Oh, that's right.
Because that's the one current. Yeah, pretty indicative of my mind.
That's great though. So you do kind of immerse yourself in all the things that you're going to be writing about?
Oh my god, 100%. Like when I was writing The Next Girl, because music is such a vital part of it, I went in and I pretty much bought all the records that Billy is talking about if I didn't already have them, and I listened to everything on vinyl for like a year. And it was intense. It was good though.
I think that's one of the things that's so fascinating about you. I always talk about you as being like an author of now and an author of the times, because all of your characters, you know, you've had great success the last few years with your books. Each of them are written in the now, you know, young female characters living in great cities, social media and dating, and all the things that people are living are part of what you write about.
Yeah, thank you. That's what I aim for, so that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. And you even have, you let us get to know your characters over the years, don't you? They often have their own, even though they're a book character, they have their own social media accounts.
Oh my God, definitely. They have to. Well, I do that for two reasons. One, because it's kind of, it's fun. Okay. So for example, with the Paris affair, it was quite a lot of fun uploading photos of Paris to Harper's account. But the other reason is I don't want to like inadvertently like stick someone's account in there that actually exists. So I'm like, if I make the account and I have the account, then I can't be like making it that this random person is like list in my book, right?
Ah, so that's, yes, that's like a double mix.
You can
double,
put a real
account in the book. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, as I said, you've had an incredible last few years with your writing and the success of your books, but you really led quite a fascinating life before being an author became your thing, didn't you?
It was interesting. Very up and down. It was, you know what? I actually just feel so grateful for it. I feel like, you know, as soon as you become a writer, every single experience you've ever had is now gold. And every up and down, especially the downs, are gold, you know, like, and I just, it helped me to recontextualize a lot of things once I became a writer, because I was just like, thank God, I'm never going to run out of material.
So give people the Pip Drysdale backstory in terms of how you came to find yourself living in fabulous places and writing novels about amazing characters.
Gosh, how did I get there? Well, I spent years as, I know it really is though. I spent years doing other creative things. So I spent years, first of all, I moved to New York and I started acting. So I spent quite a lot of time wanting to be an actress and doing really low budget films. And I did an awful Broadway play, and that was very much my thing. And then I started playing the guitar and singing and writing songs. So then that became my thing. And I was very focused on that for years. And I used to, travel around and do a lot of little folk festivals, and we did a tour through Germany and a bit in the States, and I thought that was me. I thought that was like it for me. And then I don't know, I kind of lost interest in it a little bit. And I think it's because, you know, writing songs is a very short form format, right? And I kind of always thought that I'd write novels, and everyone else always told me they thought I'd write novels. Like, I'd used to joke about things. I'd be like, oh, if it doesn't work out, it's fine. I'll just write about it.
Oh, wow.
It was like my fail safe, right? And then it got to 2015, and I think like all the stars aligned, and it just felt like the right time. There were a number of things that made me have something to say in that moment and have like the focus and the willingness to give it a real shot and the drive. Cause I think especially with your first book, cause you've never done it, so you don't know how to do it at all. I mean, I still don't know how to do it, but you really don't know the first time, and you don't know if you'll even get to the end, and you don't know if anyone will even read it. But I had a real drive inside me to figure it out. And I don't know why, it just happened. And then I got a 2-book deal, and then I had to write my second one, and I had to do it very quickly. So I just did. And then, you know, I had this career and I love it. And it sits with me as a human. Like, you know, some things resonate with you and work with your personality, and some don't. Like, for example, I can have my messy book stack. And if I'm not in a good mood, I can sit in front of my computer and type, right? I don't have to be out in the world, which is hard if you're having a bad day. Like,
that's perfect. And you've obviously then collected all of these stories over these years. So you were building these characters by just living your life.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know I was doing research, but I was kind of doing research. Like,
fantastic. So there's a heap of books coming. There's a lot more books.
Oh my God, so many.
And this book, of course, The Next Girl, is set in New York, and it's a life you know well, isn't it?
Yes. So I actually placed Billy in the apartment I used to live in, because it was just easier for me to imagine her there. I wrote most of that book during COVID. So I was in WA and I couldn't leave WA because the borders were closed. So even if COVID hadn't been happening, well, actually then the borders would have been open, but I couldn't go over to New York to do research. So I had to base it on my lived experiences there. And so putting her in my apartment was just a really good way for me to get a foothold on it. And also, ironically, you know, music plays such a strong part in the book, but the apartment I've got her in is just 2 doors down from where Miles Davis lived when he first moved to the city, and across the road from where John Lennon died, and, you know, right close to Strawberry Fields. And a lot of the venues, weirdly, that I used, I was already going to use because I used to go there. But then when I researched them, I found that a lot of them had been like the old hangouts of like Jim Morrison, or that Bob Dylan had supposedly penned Blowing in the Wind at one of them. And I was like, this is just perfect. It felt meant to be.
Absolutely, because it's such a strong theme throughout the book. So let's take us there. Billy, as we've talked about, is our main girl. And a snapshot of the story, she wakes up somewhere she really didn't expect to be.
Yeah, she wakes up and she doesn't remember anything from the night before. So she doesn't know who the guy in the bed next to her is, where she is, how she got there, what happened. All she knows is today she's going to get fired, because yesterday they lost a huge case at work, and it looked like it was her fault, but it totally was not her fault. So her whole thing is, well, I'm going to lose everything. Jane Delaney, the woman who was in the case, is going to lose everything. And Samuel Grange, who's the bad man, is going to be totally fine. He's going to drive off into the sunset in his stupid Porsche and do it all again to the next girl and the next girl after her. And there's nothing Billy can do, except she could expose him for herself. But that would mean the only way to do that would be to set herself up as his next victim, which could be kind of dangerous or like deadly. So,
and I love that, because that's, she has an addiction to justice, I think, is like how I would think about Billy. But one of the things I've told, you know, friends since I've read this book is I can't tell you anything except what the back of the book tells you, because it'd be so easy to spoil this book and what it is. And I don't mean like there's a plot twist. I mean, the book is not what you expect it to be. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yeah. I know, that's so true. It's not like there's one twist that's that like you don't want to, there's just like quite a few of them going through, and it delves into things on different levels that you don't really know where it's going at the beginning, which for me is a good thing. Like, I'm always looking to be surprised. So.
And it's a real, like, there are words you could use that would absolutely make it a certain type of book. So if you go into it not knowing what you're going to get, then it kind of turns you upside down. And that's a really exciting way to enter a book. So is that exciting as well to write?
Yeah, it was. It was really fun. Like, it gave me, because a lot of the time, sort of plot twists or shifts, paradigm shifts, actually, they happen by virtue of necessity. So, for example, when you only want to reveal something sort of 50 pages in, you have to find a way to make it that you're only revealing it there. And then through necessity, you figure out how to do that, right? And then let's say you want to reveal something halfway through, through necessity, you figure out the other things, right? So,
yeah, that's a great way to put it. It's the way you've written it also, it's a timeline in terms of what goes down is all quite quick, and you give us Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock, Wednesday afternoon. So you make us keep up with you and you feel like you're on a bit of a treadmill with you. So there's an urgency, isn't there?
Oh, totally. And I really wanted that, especially because, you know, she's working, well, to start with, she's up against a few things, like ticking time bombs. And also she works in this fast-paced legal environment. And also she's like running out of money. Like that's a ticking time bomb. And also New York is a little bit like that, like, well, a lot like that, you know, it does feel incredibly like you're on a treadmill and everything's go, go, go. So.
And it's a bit, I was saying to a mate, you know, it's a, because it is a psychological thriller, but it's not scary. But if I found, if I read it at night, I was, you know, if my eyes were drooping, if I put it down, I would then lie there thinking about it. Yeah, so it was that interesting kind of, when's the right time of day to read this book?
I don't even know.
Yeah.
It's very funny. She, Billy talks to us, you know, as a character. And so that's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because you don't quite know if she's always telling you everything. You don't know what you're getting from your character.
Yeah. Well, that, yeah, that was intentional because I really wanted her to be sort of confiding in the reader. But, you know, if you meet someone, you're going to start confiding small ways and then then you confide more and more and more because the more you trust them and the more they know you, right? So I was kind of thinking about that when I was doing it.
The fact that she's in, you know, at the start of this book with this case, she's a paralegal. So she's almost behind the scenes. You know, a lot of books with lawyers and courtroom dramas and sagas, they're the one. But yeah. She almost is a bit behind it, isn't it? And it does give her some liberties as a character and how things unfold.
Yeah, totally. I think it was really important to have her like, because the other thing I really wanted to explore with this is that, you know, Billy is a really good person, right? Deep down, she might like not always do things the way other people might do it, but deep down, she's a really good person. And I really wanted to explore the difference between being a good person and doing it kind of silently, being good silently, and as opposed to, you know, trying to do it for accolades or so everyone thinks you're a good person, you know, because there is a real, these days, there is a lot of virtue signaling. And so I really wanted her character to be really good, but behind the scenes really good, you know.
And that's true because particularly in that legal profession and in the US particularly, you know, being that kind of big name lawyer who's always on the TV, that sort of stuff, is whereas you gave her that sort of, she's behind that, isn't she?
Yeah, she's like invisible essentially, but like, you know, and like the support of everyone that is in front of the camera. So yeah.
Yeah. And that legal knowledge that you had to be able to write that, where does all that come from?
Oh my goodness. I read a lot of books to do that. Like I read a couple of books written by people who'd gone through the US legal system and then got little tidbits from there. I did a lot of reading online about it. And I also asked a couple of lawyers from a couple of different big law firms how things are structured. And it was just a huge amount of research. I always find that I underestimate how much research something's going to take when I walk into it. I always think it's going to be easier
than it actually is. And that's the thing, isn't it? Because that's the thing you get caught out on as well, because you know your readers are going to, potentially some of your readers are going to be in that profession. So you do have to get it right.
Oh my God, totally. And even like the IT stuff in there, I recently had a someone in a book club that I was doing a little chat with say, how did you learn all this? I was really impressed that you got all the details right. And I was like, well, a lot of practice. Like I actually literally took mom's phone and started like trying to do things.
I did have a big question for you around the tech, the social media, the stalking, because it's, we know that we hear about it and we see it, but honestly, tell me what you did to get yourself so engrossed.
Well, mainly I just, the honest to God answer is I figured out what had to happen in the plot and what people had to be doing. And then I figured out how to do it. So once I knew what had to happen, I'd do some Googling and then I'd go get my mum's phone. So I had her phone and my phone and I'd mess with hers.
Don't mess with your own. Only your mum.
She was just like so fine with it. She was like, sure. No problem.
I'm thinking about my teenagers. If I messed with their phone, things would not be good.
Oh my God, totally. I would like literally have a heart attack, but nobody hands over their phone except for my mum. I love her. She's just like, sure.
Because when we're talking about what you had to do, it was pretty technical, wasn't it?
Oh my God, so technical. That was why when that IT professional said, I was so impressed that you got all the details right, I was so happy because you just like, you try your best and everything worked. When I wrote the book, I mean, I'm sure there will be OS updates at some point, which will mess with a couple of things, hopefully not too quickly. But every single thing worked because I did it. So
So that's a little bit terrifying in a way, right? Because you're talking about security cameras and social media profiles and stuff that people are living in and around every day, and you were able to work out how to...
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like if I can do it, right, it's not that I feel like I'm a dummy, but, you know, I feel like I'm not like a professional criminal, right? I'm a professional novelist. So I can figure it out. That means other people can figure it out too, especially if they think that if they're consistently, you know, trying to find ways to do that. So I think like just update your security systems and like read the book and have a look at what can be done so you know what to look for. Because I think a lot of people don't even recognize that we're vulnerable in those ways. So I think it's helpful to show people how vulnerable we are. So then you know what you're looking for and you know what to be wary of.
It's an interesting one too also. I mean, I said that about all of your books, but you've always got these great young women that are in the dating scenes and whatever. And, you know, I've been out of that for a while. So when I read about what everyone's putting up with in there, everyone's got multiple pages and where they post from and who they look at and what they do. It's exhausting being a woman, right? Or a man.
Oh my God, totally. Totally exhausting.
Billy is in many ways, you know, quite damaged, but not in a bad way. Like, as you said, she wants to be good. She's a good person.
Yeah.
Did that kind of unfold, or did you know going into this how you were going to write Billy?
I kind of knew from very, very early on. I got a little bit of feedback. Like, I'd written a couple of chapters and I got a tiny bit of feedback from my agent, and it just made everything solidify. You know, sometimes someone says one line and I can't even remember what the line is. And even if I could, it would probably plot ruin, which we don't want to do. But I think it was like one very small little thing, and it just helped me to tap into exactly how to deal with it, you know? So from that point, I knew exactly how to deal with it. You know, it was just a tiny bit of feedback and it clicked.
It's that time of year. Our catalogue is out now for the mums and the other great women in your life. A book absolutely is the gift that keeps on giving. It gives that woman in your life, your mum, your grandma, your carer, time out. I reckon they've earned it. So take a look at the QBD Mother's Day catalogue out now.
You mentioned the music a little bit earlier. It is such a strong theme in this book, and I'm loving that the vinyls are behind you. But everywhere throughout this book, every chapter, every kind of imagining and things she does, there's music. So that's been a huge part of your life, as you said. But it really gives the book great grounding, doesn't it?
Yeah, I thought so. And I really tried to include songs that not only would have been in like the record collection she has, but also ones that fit within the, that they all have a purpose. Like, I've used the titles in a way that they're there for a purpose, you know. They show that she knows a broad range of music, but they're also, I didn't just throw in every song I like, you know. I've thrown a lot of songs I like, but I made sure that they fit, you know.
And it's a thread, isn't it? Because, of course, she's mourning her mum, who was a really well-known musician. And that's a huge part of the makeup of the story and where she came from and where she's going. Yes,
exactly. So, and I find that often we are linked to people by things like music. For example, I'm very linked to, like, my dad, who passed away last year, with music. You know, that was something that really tied us together and really... that really resonated with me. And it just occurred to me that I think most people have that. They know what they grew up listening to, or, you know, and you get a real sense of people through their music.
Well, I can recommend to anybody that's picking up The Next Girl to QR code on your Spotify playlist, because I found it was really cool to listen to your playlist while I was reading the book. And it's really eclectic, right? From Tom Waits to Dolly Parton, The Rolling Stones, The Killers. It's a good soundtrack.
Oh, good. I'm so glad you liked it. I had a lot of fun putting that together.
Yeah. And do you find now that you want to keep adding to it, or is that you have to stick with what you've got?
No, because... I have to stick with it, because, like, if it's not in the book, it can't be on the playlist. So that's pretty much the way I've gone with it. There are a lot of records in there that I actually didn't put anything from, because there weren't any songs referenced. So it could be significantly more extensive if I wanted to go there.
And did you have a little, like, a whiteboard with the songs clicked out that you knew where you could reference it? Or how did that kind of...
I just, as I was writing, I'd think of things. So I'd be like, when, for example, she's talking about her attitude to love versus her friend at work's attitude to love, it just came. Like, I just knew her friend was addicted to love and she was NCC's I'm not in love, right? It just made sense to me. Like, I kind of think that way anyway, you know? So, so they just came quite organically.
The men in this book, let's talk about those characters, because they are integral and they are all very, very different, aren't they?
Yeah, they're very different.
Did you have a, well, Hot Josh, obviously. I was fine. I found myself Googling references to the other men that you were talking about. But it's interesting to place those male characters in the book and keep us wondering throughout.
Yeah. In what way?
In about who was the good, who was the bad, are they all going to...
Exactly. And I think that was really important as well, because you want to create the sense that you don't actually know what you're getting when you walk into something like that. And you can see who people appear to be if you Google them, but then who are they really beneath the surface? And how much of that power dynamic, you know, when, for example, Samuel Grange goes to court, a lot of it comes down to who people perceive him to be, like why he gets away with it. So.
And I think you mentioned earlier about when I said that it was, you know, manic, the timeline was manic, and you said that's a bit like New York. Yeah. I felt like even that setting in New York, it always just feels to me like it's a bit lonely, you know, like you never quite know. You're kind of on your own a lot because people are going there from so many places. Is it like that?
I don't know. I found that, I think because I lived there, I actually found that I made some very, very good friends there. I'm still really good friends with a lot of them. But I do know what you're talking about. And there is a sense of, I think with any huge city, there is a sense of isolation, right? But one of the things I really wanted to do with it was give Billy this really normal, like, why, you know, she's a pretty sociable girl. Like she's friends with the guy at the bodega, and she's got a friend at work, and she's like, you know, she's got a really normal life, the normal fabric of life. Right. So then you could, because it gives you the sense of, well, what's going on beneath the surface. I think with most of the characters, you have one level and then you have what's really going on with them. In fact, every single character.
Absolutely. And I felt a bit also when I was reading, like I could see this on a screen. Do you, is it ever
in really your mind?
So. Yeah. Yeah. Is it ever in the back of your mind as you're writing that this would be great on the screen?
I think so. I always like see books as movies when I'm writing them. So I almost see it playing out in front of me, and then I write it down. And until I can see it playing out in front of me, usually the scene doesn't work. So I kind of construct it in my mind like a movie, and then just put down what I'm seeing and what I'm feeling as a result of like what the characters are doing. Wow. So that's probably what feels like that.
Yeah, right. And does that extend to who you imagine being those characters? Do they look like people to you?
Well, Hot Josh would definitely be Eric of True Blood, but like second season or third season. Right. Not at the very beginning. I'm not that into him then, but like second or third season, I feel like that could work. I didn't really know about the others, but I suppose, well, when I was writing Billy, I was more seeing the world through her eyes. So I don't really know who she was, because I was experiencing it as her. Like, I know she had red hair because she dyed it, but like, I couldn't tell you what she looked like, because I mean, unless she's looking in the mirror, I'm not looking, right? So.
Well, she's in your apartment, right? So you are, I guess that is, your eyes are the ones looking out.
Exactly. And I'm experiencing everything as her. I'm walking around, I'm looking at the sidewalk, it's not a third person, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so what is happening for you on all of those fronts? Because you've had lots of interest with the books over time in terms of TV and all sorts of things. What's happening for you?
Everything's good, but I'm not allowed to say anything definitive.
That's exciting.
But it's all moving in a really good direction. So hopefully, like at some point quite soon, I'll have some positive news that we can tell everyone. And I will be telling everyone as soon as that happens. But like, you never know with these things. I think with, you know, everything film and TV, it's very exciting when people show interest, and it's very exciting every time you get to a next step. But you can't count your chickens before they hatch, because you just don't know, you know. So, but all good.
And am I right in understanding that your books have come out in different orders in different countries? Is that right? So they've been released differently?
For the most part, it's only The Sunday Girl that came out in other ones, because we've been holding the others back until we could sort of, it's a whole strategy thing. So they should be coming out relatively soon. But I do have The Next Girl coming out in Canada in That comes out in May next year. So that's exciting. Totally different cover. And they're great over there. So they've been really into the book and stuff. So that's exciting.
How interesting for you to keep your head around. I mean, you've had these very different books with very different characters. How interesting to have to keep injecting yourself back into your different stories as different countries get to know you.
Oh my God. It actually is. It's really difficult kind of remembering things because you get into the new book and you start really focusing on that character and her worldview and then taking things on and like reading her books and doing her hobbies. And then to remember the old one is actually, it's hard, you know.
No pressure whatsoever. But what's next? Like, is there an after next girl?
I'm not writing a sequel right now, but I mean, you never know, do you? I'm kind of hoping someone picks it up for TV and they have like multiple series because I feel like Billy would just be such a good character. Ongoingly, like I feel like you could have 5 series with Billy. Like
you left us like on the ledge where we could totally launch,
where there could totally be another one, all 5 more, right? So that's always an option. But the one that I'm writing at the moment is based over in the States. I can't really say too much more than that, but I am 30,000 words in, so that is good.
Oh my goodness, you have a lot going on, Pip Drysdale. Like you literally 23 fingers in pies. That's amazing.
So it's really, really good.
Oh, this fantastic.
Messy bookcase.
Hence the pile. I'm going to pop mine up there. Well, congratulations on The Next Girl. It's a great read. Perfect for summertime in Australia. Grab it, take it to the beach. And huge congratulations. We're really proud. It's great to finally meet you in person.
Yeah, it's so great. Thank you so much, Hay, for being so enthusiastic and loving and stuff. I really appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks so much for your company today on QBD Book Club, the podcast. We'll chat again soon.